This is the Education Gadfly Show.
Last year alone, the teachers racked up over $5.9 million.
Sorry. Now, here's your host, Mike Petrilli.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me in welcoming my co-host, the true victor of Super Tuesday, Janie Skull.
I swept all the states. They're all roaring for me.
You know, why you are the victor here is because it's still an undecided contest. There's still time for a candidate
to come
in at the end and bring it home.
Dark horse.
I think that could be you.
I could be the dark horse.
Are you old enough to be president?
No.
Okay,
yeah, not even close.
What? How old do you have to be? What is it?
I think 35, right?
That's such a funny requirement. I realize now
it does seem rather arbitrary.
Would this be the first year that I would make it? Well, no, I just turned 39. Now, I guess last time around I would have been. See, I'm already 4 years over the hill on this one.
Where some of us are turning 25 on Saturday.
25. Janie, I cannot believe it. You are wise beyond your years.
Uh-huh.
Wow. Very exciting. You know, that means, according to some people, that your adolescence is now coming to an end.
I know. It's
That's
kind
about
of
right
like
thing.
Quarter century.
Yeah.
You're just all downhill from here.
Don't give me this, like, I'm having my quarter life crisis.
No, I'm not.
That.
I'm not at that point.
I hate when people say that.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, rub it into me. That you're so young. All right. Well, hey, you know, Janie, you weren't here on the show last week, but I did make an announcement that is, you know, pretty upsetting, which is that we are contemplating whether or not we should continue doing the podcast. Mm-hmm. We've been looking at our data. We're getting about 200 listeners a week, 200 great listeners. We love you. We value you. But, you know, we have to ask these tough questions. Is that enough? And so we've been encouraging our listeners to get out there and tell other people about the show. And so some of you listening today are probably listening for the first time. We welcome you to the Education Gadfly Show. We're going to put on a great show for you. I do want to read a couple of the notes that we got from folks responding to this. Let's see. We've got them right here, Janie. First of all, from Aaron Grossman says, here's my commitment. I will find 20 additional listeners, increasing your listenership by 10% and allowing you to make safe harbor.
Awesome.
I love it. Very nice.
Adequate early process.
This one was a little bit more confusing. We got a lot of, by the way, good feedback, people with suggestions on how to improve the show. I won't name this person here, but he says, I listen to the Education Gadfly podcast pretty regularly, but its demise wouldn't leave a big hole in my life. which is interesting. There was another one that said basically they are a regular listener and it's the worst podcast they've ever heard, which makes us wonder, you know.
Interesting.
Why do they feel like they have to keep listening to it every week?
Although
if they didn't, we'd be down to $1.99. So anyways, keep those letters coming in. We do want to hear from you if this is a valuable part of your weekly routine. And even better, tell your friends and family they should be listening to. Okay, lots to cover this week. Ty, let's get started with Pardon the Gadfly.
Last week, Checker Finn wrote of a growing war against the Common Core, and Rick Hess has written that it is hard to find experts willing to publicly defend the standards. Should Common Core supporters be worried?
Well, Ty, look, there's been a small group of critics out there who have been arguing for a couple years now against the Common Core, and I respect many of them. Some of their arguments are pretty sound and need serious responses, and that's what Checker has tried to do in his most latest Gadfly article. You know, what he points out is that some of the supporters of Common Core aren't helping the cause. And we're talking about you, Arne Duncan. We're talking about you. He, for some reason, decided to get into the debate in South Carolina where they were contemplating, the legislature was contemplating overruling the state board and pulling the state out of the Common Core. Personally, I think this would not be such a bad thing. This is meant to be voluntary. And if states don't want to do it, they shouldn't do it. South Carolina standards on most subjects are also pretty good. So it wouldn't be a huge loss.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of states that definitely rushed into it with race the top and all of the, you know, promise of money and signing onto it. And yeah, it was probably a little rash. So I don't think it's surprising that a lot of states are now kind of stepping back and saying, was this actually a good decision? You know, are we still kind of obligated to stay true to this? And yeah, you know, Checker's always a little, he likes hyperbole a little bit. So, you know, saying it's a war on Common Core, I think that's a bit of a stretch. But at the same time, for people who really believe in the Common Core, yeah, I think it's time to step it up and really get your argument out there and get, you know, why you think the Common Core should be in place and really try to counter all this pushback that's pretty much going to start building up.
But I think it's also a framing issue, okay? I mean, I think it's okay if some states back out. We should not see that as a defeat for the Common Core. I guess the worry is if South Carolina backed out, then there might be some momentum and we'd lose other states too. But again, okay. I mean, you know, let's fight it on the merits. In South Carolina, their other standards were pretty decent. So, you know.
But that's pretty rare. South Carolina.
That is rare. So in other states, we wouldn't have it feel the same way. Yeah. I mean, the state should make the decision. And the other thing that's just pointing out is that mostly it was state boards of education that signed on to the Common Core. And not surprisingly, state legislators, and in some cases governors, want to have a say too. And they should. Topic number two.
On Tuesday, Arne Duncan released school discipline data showing that Black and Latino children are more likely to be subject to school discipline than their peers. Is this a civil rights issue, or are students in these groups simply breaking school rules more often?
Who knows?
That's
come on,
the question,
Duncan,
right?
Come up with some data that actually shows some sort of causation. I mean, this it's just getting a lot really worked up about something where, yeah, it could show potentially that, you know, it's a civil rights issue and teachers are racist and they're just, you know, punishing minority students more often, or it could just show that minority students are committing, you know, infractions more often and kind of deserve to be punished more often. It's just there's no, the data here just doesn't go deep enough to really be able to make any grand sweeping claims about it.
And of course, we face the same question in the larger society. I mean, we know that the imprisonment rate for African Americans and Latinos is much higher than for whites. Mm-hmm. And the question is that because our justice system is racist and that whites are not getting punished for the same crimes? Now, in some cases, I think you can make that case, like mm-hmm. on drug abuses, where this issue around crack cocaine will get you much heavier sentences than other kinds. But there's also just the issue that it does appear by all evidence that African-American Latinos, especially men, commit more crimes than white men do, at least at higher rates than white men do. And so it's a mix. And same here. It is likely, I think, that there are some schools out there where they're, because of racism and because of poor training, et cetera, Black students are getting treated more harshly. And by all means, that's something to look at. And, you know, if what we're saying here is the Office of Civil Rights has collected these data and they're going to look at places where the data look questionable and do some investigating, okay. But let's not jump to conclusions like Arne Duncan does, like some of the other people that commented on this yesterday called it, you know, we have a caste system in our school. Caste system? How would you say that word?
Caste.
Yeah. You know, some people saying that we have a caste system in our school. I think we have to respond to this information carefully and say, we don't know exactly what this means. And we need more study, and we need to take it case by case as well.
I mean, there has been other research that's looked into this, like the Washington Post thing from a couple weeks ago that looked at it within D.C. and really did find that for the same infractions, minority students were getting more severe punishments. So, yes, there is actually evidence that, you know, what Duncan is kind of arguing here is probably true in many cases. But at the same time, you know, I don't think it's a stretch to believe that a lot of this probably correlates with low-income students, with students who, you know, like you were saying, kind of come from, you know, backgrounds where maybe their parents or their fathers, you know, are in jail, and backgrounds where it's, you know, it's not okay that they're committing more infractions, but it does correlate, and it makes more sense that these students would be probably committing more infractions.
So, you know, also, we have a new study out this week showing that teacher morale has gone into the toilet in the last couple of years for a variety of reasons. The last thing we need right now is to paint all teachers with a broad brush and call them racist. Certainly there are racist teachers out there, but I like to hope that that they are still fairly rare.
A colleague also brought up the idea that minority students and students in low-income schools probably have more, many more newer teachers, and newer teachers might rely on discipline more often just because they don't have, you know, the control that a veteran teacher might have in a classroom. So it's just, you know, there are many aspects to this.
Okay, topic number three.
Is Joel Klein right that the GOP candidates should start talking about education?
No. Well, yes. Well,
for whose
maybe.
Benefit?
Yeah, exactly. Look, Joel Klein wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post saying, as we hear this every 4 years, the candidates aren't talking enough about education. This is matters to our
Ed 12.
It matters to our economy. Look, the reason they're not talking about it is that on the one hand, Mitt Romney doesn't want to admit that he has a lot in common with Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. That's not something he particularly wants to tell primary voters right now. Rick Santorum has been talking about education. It's just not the talk that Joel Klein wants to hear, which is, you know, get the federal government out of the way. Homeschooling is good. Public schooling is bad. you know, some of which it makes some sense, some of which is kind of kooky. I think if Romney ever sews this thing up, you'll hear him talk about education more. But, you know, his challenge is that it's not going to sound all that different from what Obama's saying, because Obama has co-opted the Republican message on education.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I think it's better for the, you know, nation as a whole and the citizens of our nation if they did start talking about education, because it really would start spurring an actual conversation on this. We could see where they, you know, where the candidates fell out, see what they really believed in. But from their perspective, to do this, I think, would really only hurt their campaigns at this point, because I think there are a lot of conservative Republicans that really would balk at many of the things that, yeah, that Romney would support. And then there are a lot of kind of moderate conservatives that would probably balk at all of the things that Santorum would promote. And it's just, it's not in their interest, certainly.
Right. I mean, what Joel Klein wants is for these candidates, especially Mitt Romney, to commit to a particular agenda on federal education reform. And I don't think he will. And I think Joel Klein's going to be disappointed. I mean, look, it's the jury's still out. Is Romney going to be more of a Margaret Spellings Republican? Mm-hmm. Or is he going to be more of a Lamar Alexander Republican when it comes to education? And the truth is, nobody knows yet. I don't think he's made up his mind. He's got a variety of folks on his advisory panel, including, it came out this week, Margaret Spellings. I don't think we know where he's going yet. Okay, that's all the time we've got for Pardon the Gadfly. Thanks for playing, Janie. Thanks for hosting, Ty. Now it's time for everyone's favorite, Amber's Research Minute. Amber, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Mike.
So did you catch that debate between Checker and Christopher Edley on the NewsHour?
I did, and I thought, like you did, that Checker was very diplomatic about the whole thing.
Look, I thought they agreed entirely too much.
Well, this is what happens when you're on the NewsHour or NPR. It just, something takes over, and you have a melodious voice, and you tend to agree with one another.
Right.
Respectfully. You know, it's interesting. Checker and Chris go way, way back, I guess, to the 1970s, from when Chris was in the Carter administration and Checker was working for Pat Moynihan on the Hill. Fun. But look, this is a sensitive, difficult issue. And I thought Checker had a very right. You know, he said, let's not assume that there's a racist behind
every
tree.
I'm like, did he have to say tree, though? I'm like,
I thought maybe that was some sort of phrase that used to be popular. I don't know. It's worth checking out. Okay, Amber, what you got for us this
week? We've got the latest installment of the MetLife survey of K-12 teachers called The American Teacher. This year, the focus is on the economy. This is, by the way, the 28th annual edition of this teacher survey. Also, findings from parents of K-12 students and students themselves. I'm just going to talk to you about the teacher survey. We got roughly 1,000 teachers. Their responses are weighted to mirror the census demographics and so on and so forth. A few key findings. Number one, teacher satisfaction is at its lowest in over 20 years. In fact, reported levels of satisfaction have decreased 15 points since just 2 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. These declines are coupled with increases in the number of teachers who do not feel their jobs are secure, which incidentally grew from 8% in 2006 to 34% in 2011. More than three quarters of teachers also report budget cuts in their schools last year across all types of schools, urban, rural, suburban. Two thirds also report that their schools have had layoffs of teachers and other staff in the last year. One third say there's been reductions or eliminations in the arts, music, foreign language, or PE in the last year. 6 in 10 say the average class size in their school has increased. Frankly, it's hard to know. I mean, when you're going through, these are pretty depressing data, but it's also self-report. I was also left wondering if it was kind of an excuse for them to bellyache, because at one point, two-thirds say that their salaries aren't fair for the work that they do. I mean, a lot of people are going to report that. Finally, last little finding, teachers who report that their budgets have decreased during the past year are also more likely to be pessimistic that student achievement will improve. So there's always that sort of money emphasis in teachers' minds. So there was definitely, I think, some attempt, frankly, to stir up some sympathy here for education budget cuts. I was looking at MetLife. You know, obviously they provide benefits and annuities, that sort of thing. So, anyway.
So what's interesting to me is that, if I recall correctly, earlier surveys from, say, the mid-2000s and late-2000s were showing much higher teacher satisfaction and had actually increased over the decade, which was, I think we made a point out of, which was surprising because it was the No Child Left Behind era and all this testing and accountability. You might think that teacher morale would decline, but it didn't. It actually seemed to go up.
That's right.
And so it seems like what really matters here is the budget. I mean, the budget cuts, they feel it. They worry about their own jobs. They see it in their own take-home pay, and they see it in the offerings that their schools are providing. And some people might blame this on Race to the Top or some of the other kinds of reforms like that, teacher evaluations. I suspect the real story here is simply about money. Mm-hmm. I do have sympathy for teachers. I mean, you know, any place you work, if there's suddenly concerns that people are going to get laid off and that there's not as much money for this or that or the other thing, that's not fun to be in. Mm-hmm. Of course, that is also the reality that most workers have had to deal with in the last couple of years.
But 2/3 reporting layoffs, like, I thought that was kind of high, you know, but they clumped the question together for teachers and other staff. So, like, you know, who could that? I mean, that could be anybody. I really think they should have, you know, separated those questions. But
I don't know. I mean, the one thing beyond money that I think is a large part of it is just evaluations in general. I mean, for them to say that their jobs are not stable anymore, I think a lot of teachers are realizing, you know, if they don't perform well, mm-hmm. they might lose their jobs.
And maybe.
That's a big difference in the last couple of years.
I agree. But I wonder if we could figure that out better.
I'd like to know why they're dissatisfied.
Teacher, those evaluations are coming, but they're not here yet in those places.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
Or is it that when they say they're insecure about their job, it's because, you know, their friend just got laid off, you know, because of budget cuts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, right. Because there are a lot of questions here about the economy writ large and not just teaching.
Yeah.
Like, in a very sad data point, they ask kids, you know, if they were worried their parents were going to lose their jobs. And of course, the majority of kids said that. I mean, it's like, golly, you know, what are you doing asking kids this thing? So,
what are parents doing?
Yeah.
You know, putting that on their kids.
Right.
Well, I mean, how do you hide that, though? I mean, that's one of the
I mean, I guess
things.
If your parent has lost a job, yes.
Right. But, or your friend's parents. Yeah. I mean, you know,
they're hearing about it. That's right.
Look, in outside the Washington, D.C. bubble that we live in here, you know, there are a lot of people losing jobs. Mm-hmm. It's been a tough time.
Yeah.
All right. Very good. Now, Amber, I understand we are going to do our last pop quiz this week.
Our last pop quiz. And unfortunately, we didn't have droves and droves of listeners answering our pop quiz quiz question every week. I don't know why. I thought I picked interesting questions.
Amber, it wasn't you.
I'm not going to take it personally.
This was a failed attempt to make our show more interactive. This is the thing. If you've listened for a while or if you're new, you should know this about the Education Gadfly Show. We are willing to try new things, and if they don't work out, pull the plug.
Experiment, innovate,
kind of shame.
And then shut it down.
Yeah. That's right.
All right. So our last question.
So, for example,
question.
We used to let Rick say all kinds of sexist things on air.
And we still don't.
I think Joe edits those out now. Yes.
Oh, got it.
Okay, go ahead.
So last question. Last week I asked which state had the strongest charter law. This is measured by the Alliance of Public Charter Schools. Your choices were Massachusetts, New York, Florida, and Maine. What do you guys think? Mike knows.
I know this one. It's
Janie, do you know?
Florida? I don't know.
Mike?
It is Maine.
Maine is number
according to who?
To National Alliance.
I swear to God, I was just looking at that and they were like 40th or something.
Their most recent ranking. They just had a new law. But the Center for Education Reform disagrees strongly and does not believe that Maine deserves that kind of a high rating.
Well, so good. I'm with CER. There we go.
Anyway, there you have it.
Yes. So that's it. We're not going to ask you another question.
That's it. We're done.
People would like.
You're off the hook.
To do education trivia with Amber, they can email her at awinkler@edX.
And I know I'm going to get many emails.
All right. Thanks, Amber.
You're welcome. All righty.
Well, sit on down and tell me what up with that. What up with that? Yes, sir.
Chris Irvine, welcome back to the show.
How's it going, Mike?
Well, I'm a little sad because talking about changes on the show, this is Chris's last What's Up With That? At least as a regular employee of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute.
That's right. And from some of the feedback we're getting online, it sounds like some of you listeners might not be that upset.
Well, that's, you know, I mean, I'm sure it's a vocal minority, Chris. You know, Chris, it's not that Chris is getting laid off or that his performance evaluation here at Fordham was negative. Much to the difference, he has gotten an exciting new job. You want to tell us about it?
I will be moving over to Basis DC, the new charter school opening up in the fall, and helping them out with operations.
Very very exciting. You know, Basis is the school that started in Tucson. It has always gotten ranked as one of the best high schools in the country. Their kids take about a million AP classes apiece, and they do tremendously well. They're expanding to D.C., and it's very interesting. A lot of people wondering if this can work in a city with a lot of poverty, a lot of kids performing well below grade level. How does a school like this help them catch up and keep accelerating their progress? So this is going to be fun to watch.
And if you've got an eighth grader looking for a school, you know, registration is still open.
Okay, there we go. All right, Chris, your very last. What's up with that? Bring it, baby, bring it.
Well, if you thought some of the teacher pension systems were ridiculous, you better prepare yourself for this one. Under one of the insurance plan options in the Buffalo, New York school district, teachers are covered for any and all plastic surgery procedure. That's right, Botox, liposuction, tummy tucks, rhinoplasty, even breast enhancements, all covered under insurance plan for Buffalo teachers. And it gets even better. They pay no deductible on these surgeries. Unlimited elective plastic surgery for free, thanks to what's known in the insurance industry as a cosmetic rider. Somehow, Buffalo teachers have been benefiting from this cosmetic rider for almost four decades now. Last year alone, the teachers racked up over $5.9 million.
Sorry.
Over $5.9 million in plastic surgery. What's up with that? $5.9 million in elective plastic surgery? This district must be flush with cash. Not quite. According to recent figures, Buffalo is facing a $42 million deficit in next year's budget. The president of the Buffalo Board of Ed rightfully points out that with an extra $5.9 million in their coffers, the district would be able to add about 240 additional teachers to its already beleaguered staff. How have the good people of Buffalo allowed this abuse of public tax dollars to go on for so long? Perhaps the teachers in Buffalo are underpaid, but those issues shouldn't be addressed in the form of ridiculous and unnecessary insurance benefits. But hey, maybe I'm just an oblivious outsider and the people in Buffalo actually like paying for their teachers to look like Joan Rivers.
I bet they have a really attractive teaching force.
I found this, CNN covered this a little while back, and there was a video of a woman, a teacher who they interviewed, who I'm sure was, you know, selectively chosen, but she made Joan Rivers looked 100% natural. I mean,
that's insane.
It was like monthly Botox injections. She looked like a clown.
So what is the argument on the other side here? I mean, does anybody try to defend this?
So the teachers have just had this for so long, and you know, it's difficult for them to defend. It's more just, I guess, for several years now they've had some problems negotiating, and both sides are having issues and refusing to come to the table and sit down and really talk about salaries, which the teachers feel are they're grossly underpaid, and they think that this is, you know, for them a good form of recuperating some of that salary. But
now I have seen some blog posts that have asked the question whether or not a teacher who's more attractive might get better value-added scores than one that who is not, all things considered. So what if there was evidence that, let's say, a nose job would actually boost student achievement? Then would you be in favor of it, Chris?
I think you've got yourself an argument there, Mike.
All right. We can do it here. We can find a way. I just like to argue these things. Well, thank you, Chris. That is ridiculous. What is up with that? I do hope that you might come back and do some guest appearances sometimes. You can tell us about craziness happening on the ground in the world of running actual schools.
Well, I hope to do that, Mike. Thanks. It's been a great run.
All right. Just don't be one of those principals that you've ridiculed for the last several years or other administrators.
Yeah. I'm going to find myself on the butt of one of these segments and before I know it. So
make
we'll
sure
see.
That doesn't happen. Yeah. All right. Thanks so much. Thanks, Janie. This is all the time we've got for the Education Gadfly Show. Until next time.
I'm Janie Scull.
And I'm Mike Petrilli at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute's Education Gadfly Show, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.